It is MBTA Day on the show. Safety top of mind. This week, transit officials resubmitted a safety improvement plan to the Federal Transit Administration. We'll be calling that the FTA, on deadline after the last version was rejected for proposing improvements basically on too slow of a schedule. MBTA General Manager Philip Eng says some changes are already underway from this new plan and expressed confidence that this version will pass muster with the federal government. Riders may be hearing a different story, as members of the Healey administration caution that it could be a year before riders really feel any difference resulting from Eng's hard push to improve safety, to hire more staff, to respond to rider concerns. Eng's tricky dance continues. So you have to simultaneously inspire public confidence, satisfy watchdogs, and make real progress on rescuing a transit system that has clearly been in crisis. So, as is often the case, we have plenty to talk about. So who are we going to talk about it with? Here to discuss, Chris Dempsey, who is the former Massachusetts Assistant Secretary of Transportation. We are getting to know Chris well as we're having these conversations. And also joining us today, Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board. So Chris, welcome back.
Great to be back.
And Brian, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So I do want to start with this plan and the FTA and Philip Eng. It was due Monday. It was submitted on time. It was caused by some near misses. So let's start there, because last week we learned a little bit more about these incidents, these near misses that prompted the federal government to demand that the T fix a bunch of stuff really around what we can call track protocols. First, April 13th, there's this one-ton counterweight that falls on a lineman who's doing work on the blue line. He was hospitalized. Chris, help us make some sense of that. What's a counterweight used for on rail lines? How does it happen that it falls on someone? And, you know, so often I kind of want to ask, how bad is it? How bad is that something like that happens?
Well, this speaks to the risk of working on a railway system. You're talking about big, heavy equipment where 2,000 pounds is probably one of the lighter pieces of equipment that the MBTA uses when it's repairing tracks. So you have to have really strict control over the right-of-way, who is on the tracks or near the tracks, and perfect, really perfect communication between those workers and any vehicle that might be moving or any piece of equipment that might be moving. So 2,000 pounds is a scary number. Again, it's not much relative to other things that are out there moving on these tracks, sometimes at very high speed. But any time that there's a near miss, you talked about this one on the blue line, there was another on the green line. Anytime there's a near miss, it raises concerns about the protocols that are in place to keep the workers and moving equipment separate.
All right. So, Brian, you were nodding in the beginning of Chris's statement when he was like, this is dangerous. There's a lot of heavy stuff. And it made me realize, I guess I hadn't stopped to think about just how dangerous is it on a daily basis to do repair work on a transit line.
Well, Tiziana, I have that right-of-way certification that Chris just mentioned from when I worked at the T. You go through an eight-hour training course just to even get out on the right-of-way. And they teach you things such that it's pretty clear you might not go home that night if you don't do things the right way. You know, Chris mentioned 2,000-pound counterweights on catenary. There's also 600 volts of electricity.
Catenary.
Catenary are the overhead wires on the green line and also on the blue line north of airport, which is you have to keep tension on those wires at all times, and that's what the counterweights do. So that is a very heavy piece of equipment. There's 600 volts of electricity that powers the trains, both through the catenary and through the third rail. It is a dangerous environment with very minimal room for error out there.
Okay, so that actually adds then some really helpful context to this safety plan. So now the FTA is saying we have a very dangerous environment. We had four near misses. Clearly something is amiss here, right? This weekend, so this we get this new plan submitted to the FTA on Monday when the FTA says, and I am paraphrasing using my words here, you didn't seem to have enough sense of urgency to fix this in the last plan. All right, so here's the new general manager, Philip Eng. He's on WCVB's On the Record over the weekend. And he is sort of, I don't know if downplaying or brushing off is the right. He is addressing the rejection of the original proposal.
With regards to that letter and the process, you know, I took that as this is a normal process with FTA. I've worked with many federal agencies in the course of my career, FHWA, FRA, FTA, and there's always this back and forth.
Okay, FHWA, Federal Highway Administration, FRA, Federal Railroad Administration. Is there always this back and forth, Brian?
There is always this back and forth. These letters are fairly routine, believe it or not, as scary as that sounds. I think what we're seeing with Phil Ng is he's relatively new to Boston. Maybe in New York, these letters come all the time and it's not a big deal. We saw the last general manager got in some real hot water for not publicizing letters that he received from the FTA. And I think this is a good lesson for Mr. Ng to learn. And as I said publicly, the Federal Transit Administration needs to not just copy the general manager on these things. They need to start letting the public know when these things get sent.
So Chris Dempsey, he did get a little pushback from the two interviewers that he hadn't immediately let the public know that in this case, TA, Federal Transit Administration, I'm going to keep kind of working this word salad, right, had pushed back, probably because, in his mind, this was a standard back and forth.
Yeah. Well, let's remind your listeners why this is unique. So the Federal Transit Administration very rarely steps in to take control and oversight of safety of a subway system.
And that happened last year.
It's only happened twice in the history of the FTA. The first was at the Washington, D.C. metro system, and the second is Boston's MBTA in the wake of so many events, including the death of a rider. So that's the unique thing, is the FTA's focus and attention. They are really riding herd over the MBTA right now. That's a good thing. It's a good thing that these letters are going back and forth. And so the general manager is right. In some sense, this is routine. You want to have that healthy dialogue. You want it in writing. On the other hand, this is a very unique situation, and it speaks to the depths of the challenges at the MBTA.
So we are talking tea. It's Tea Day here on Radio Boston. You've just heard from Chris Dempsey, who's a former Massachusetts in the Transportation Department, Brian Kane, who has been with the MBTA, now on the advisory board. We're talking about this back and forth between the MBTA and the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, around safety. Okay, so a couple more things on this. And again, you know, we could stop there, but this seems to be a very huge deal. I'm understanding today for the first time just how dangerous this work is. And Philip Bang has now said, okay, so we submitted a new plan June 5th. I believe the FTA will accept it. He has also said, we're making lots of changes to signaling and how you get authorization to be on the tracks. He's also said some of the stuff that's in that plan we've actually already got underway. So now I'm going to sort of ask the sanguine question, Brian. Do you feel confident that the plan will both satisfy the federal government and that the MBTA is now in a place to sufficiently and quickly enough create appropriate safety conditions for the level of safety repairs and maintenance that we know has to go on now and in the next 12 months?
I am and I'm not. I do think the safety plan will pass muster with the Federal Transit Administration. A lot of the issues the FTA had with it were around staffing, and that's where I have some concerns. As everyone knows, the T is having some massive staffing challenges right now, especially in the ranks of folks that have to do dispatch. And why is that important? It is the dispatchers that allow folks to get onto the right-of-way during revenue service, which is during the time when trains are running, and overnight. Those folks need to be incredibly experienced and incredibly nimble in their activities and incredibly nimble in their way to speak over the system-wide radio, and I just worry that they might not have enough seasoned folks to do that. Now, I think that can be overcome eventually with time and with training. Unfortunately, time is not always something on the T side.
So people, time, and training. People, time, and training. Chris Dempsey, how many times already since we've been having these regular conversations have we brought up hiring enough people, how long it's going to take, getting them trained up, and having it have impact?
Yeah, let's talk again about the scale of the system here. So the MBTA has indicated that it wants to do training for employees and contractors. It's going to total 10,000 people. That's like a third of Fenway Park needs to be retrained just on this issue of right-of-way, the same training that Brian Kane had. They're going to get to 3,000 of those by June 15th. That's an enormous effort.
That is
over
actually
the next
a lot.
Couple weeks.
It's June 7th.
Right. So presumably some of that's already been happening, but that is a big initiative to do that. If you look more broadly at the T, the budget that's being proposed to be passed this year is going to have 7,600 positions, but the T only has about 5,000 employees right now. So they need to hire somewhere to find an additional 2,000 employees just to meet the budgeted positions that they're putting in place. It's very difficult to do that in this environment. Organizations and companies of all kinds are looking for talent right now, having a hard time doing it. So it's a monumental challenge that's been talked about under the Baker administration and is very much continuing into the Healey administration.
All right. And Brian Kane, I'll turn back to you. One of the things that I know from having run organizations is when your organization grows quickly, maintaining culture is incredibly difficult. We already know from the FTA, their criticism is that the T had insufficient culture of safety in the first place. Even if the T can meet a percentage of its hiring goals, how do you then imbue a culture of safety into an organization that's growing that fast?
Well, it starts at the top, Tiziana, as you know. So the general manager has made it very clear that safety is his top priority, and it's how he conducts himself. And it's also, the fact that the administration has gone out and hired Patrick Lavin, who is a world-class pro when it comes to transportation safety, not just to look at the T, but to look at all of the Department of Transportation. That sets an important precedent, and that sets an important signal to everybody that they are taking this very seriously.
And we're here in Studio 2 still with Brian Kane of the MBTA Advisory Board and Chris Dempsey, who served in the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. We're talking about the T. I'm going to move forward something I was going to talk about a little later in the show, which is the commuter rail, because just a little earlier today, the Boston Globe came forward with some new data about the performance of the commuter rail that caught our eye. I want to talk about that a little bit, showing that last month commuter rail ridership peaked at 80% of its pre-pandemic level. And now, given that, basic MBTA trains, for example, are performing at about 50%, that's a really big difference. And in addition, by the way, for listeners, it had tumbled at one point, commuter rail ridership in 2020, to about 2%. So that is a big change. And on average, 94% of trains arrived on time, according to the T and to Keolis Commuter Services that operates the commuter rail. So I just want to start there because it means people are turning to the commuter rail and we're seeing a different kind of performance. Chris Dempsey, first, just react to the data.
Well, let's make sure that your listeners understand that the MBTA's commuter rail system is operated by this private provider, Keolis. It's a French company that brings its expertise over here to run the system. Just like you might hire some landscaper to mow your lawn every month, the MBTA hires this company to run the commuter rail system. The MBTA owns the trains, the stations, the maintenance facilities, but Keolis manages the process on a day-to-day basis.
So I wouldn't just be hiring a landscaper. I would be hiring a landscaper to take my lawnmower out of the garage and mow my lawn.
Perfect analogy. That's okay. Right. So the ridership is really encouraging here. I think there's a couple of different factors. One of them may be that fare collection is getting better on the commuter rail, in part because there are now gates at North Station that require people to show a ticket as they're entering the system.
I think that's part of it. So meaning that we can count the riders better, not that there are actually more riders.
I think that's some of it.
Okay.
But I do think it's encouraging that we're seeing ridership come back because commuter rail riders tend to be higher income, they tend to be more white-collar workers, and it's a good sign for downtown Boston and the region if those folks are returning to the system. I'll just say one other thing here, which is that for many folks who are commuting on the commuter rail system, it's often seen as the best way to avoid congestion. And that's part of the downside here is that because traffic has come back on our highways, people are fed up with sitting in that traffic and they're saying, I'm going to go back to commuter rail and give it another try.
So, Brian Kane, that helps me understand the bodies and the count. But what about the timeliness, right? Because certainly the story, the drumbeat on things like the Red Line and now the poor Blue Line, which used to be fairly timely, and the Green Line has been slowdowns and slow zones and lack of reliability. And here we're hearing a kind of performance from the commuter rail that feels different.
Well, I think people are voting with their feet. So as these slow zones increase and as the congestion increases, as Chris said, and things seem to get worse and worse and worse, folks still need to move around the region. Anyone who's tried to drive on the expressway or on Storrow recently knows that it's basically a parking lot most of the day. So your next best option in many cases is commuter rail. And if you look at where the ridership has increased, it's on those lines that tend to mirror or match subway lines for the most part. So I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that folks who might have taken the red or the orange line in the past are now getting on the red line at Braintree or Quincy or the orange line up at Oak Grove. to be able to avoid some of those slowdowns. And it makes perfect sense if you think about it.
So we then see that the advocacy group, the local advocacy group Transit Matters, has come out with a report calling for a pretty big overhaul of the commuter rail system, a big piece of it being electrifying the trains. You know, we also know that services increased up to 300% on the commuter rail. Does this indicate that they want service, to increase up to 300%? Service has increased some since the start of the pandemic. That's the target they're looking for. Does data like this suggest that these kinds of big investments might make some sense, Chris Dempsey?
Well, I think electrification makes a lot of sense. I would approach it in an incremental fashion. We already have electrification on one of the main lines from Boston to Providence because the Amtrak Acela runs on that line. That's an electrified service. So the MBTA could start by electrifying those locomotives and trying this out. I think the next place to go would be something like the Fairmount line, which goes from South Station down to Reedville through the heart of some environmental justice communities. The benefits of electrification are many, and I'll highlight two. One is that you reduce emissions. Today, you're running those locomotives with dirty diesel. It's polluting our air. Moving to electrification is a big benefit. The second is that when you electrify the system, you can actually get those trains to accelerate a little bit faster. And so as you move to a system where it's no longer just all long trips from the far suburbs, but it's shorter stops like Brighton to Boston or Dorchester to South Station, you want to have the ability to get those trains moving quickly. It'll speed up the quality of and speed of that service. So electrification makes a lot of sense, and I'd approach it in incremental fashion.
All right, while we're talking about investments, I'm going to make a pivot here because this really caught my eye. So last week we had a conversation here on Radio Boston after a tragedy. A man fell off a platform in front of a Green Line train at North Station over Memorial Day weekend. At that time, we talked with Stacey Thompson, who's executive director of the nonprofit Livable Streets, about that accident. Here's a little bit about what Stacey had to say.
It appears that in this case, it was likely not the operator's fault. It looks like this individual is trying to force himself onto the train and in that process fell onto the tracks. You know, we don't have all of the details, but I think that this is likely unrelated to the pattern of events that led to the FTA investigation.
Again, Federal Transit Administration, all the safety stuff we've been talking about. We noticed, though, that recently the MTA in New York City is making an investment. This is the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York piloting some glass doors at a few stations that would essentially, you know, like you might see in the trains in an airport. Right, that would maybe prevent an accident like this. And Brian, the pilot in three stations will cost $100 million. Mm-hmm. When you hear something like that, you think, oh, how do we ever get to from A to better when you hear that it costs $100 million to pilot something like that in a place like New York?
Transportation is not inexpensive to build and operate. I think that's a lesson that we've all learned recently. And just to follow up on something Chris just said, you know, the T is putting $84 million into regional rail transformation, but it's putting $500 million into diesel locomotive overhauls and procurements, which I think is really disheartening. With respect to platform screen doors, Tiziana, my organization, the MBTA Advisory Board, has called for the piloting of this somewhere in the system for the past few years. We look at systems around the world, not necessarily on this continent, but around the world that have them. They're safer. Their stations are cleaner. You can heat them in the winter and cool them in the summer. You have climate control. You have less brake dust in the air for people breathing in while they're waiting for trains. It just makes sense across the board. We're not seeing it, however. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the T still operates a fairly antiquated signal system where you don't know where the trains are going to stop every single time they come into the platform. For those platform screen doors to work, the train needs to stop in the same place every single time. We just don't have that right now. Now, we're told we can get that in the future with the new red-orange line cars with the new signal system that's supposed to come with it. But the wait continues.
Okay, Chris Dempsey, in 30 seconds, I'm keying in on Brian's supposed to come with it, pregnant pause. Supposed to means maybe it doesn't or someday it does.
Well, the T is struggling with a number of capital projects right now, and I would be a little bit reluctant to push them too hard on these station platform doors only because there's so much catch-up to do. I will note, Tiziana, it's very interesting. The current head of the New York subway and bus system is Rich Davey, who was the former head of the MBTA. So interesting to see him move ahead with that project while we're still waiting here.
And we are talking the tea today with former Massachusetts Assistant Secretary of Transportation Chris Dempsey and MBTA Advisory Board Executive Director Brian Kane. We have covered a wide range of things from safety to the commuter rail to the cost of what it would take to put on glass doors to electrification to diesel. And yet there is so much more to discuss. There are a couple of things I want to pick up on now, and I'm going to come back to new MBT General Manager Philip Eng. And I admit one of the things that's been on my mind is when do we drop the new? But not yet, because actually it's only been a few weeks. And the job that he has taken on is massive. It's been, what, 8 weeks, 9 weeks? Not that long. So I want to talk about a couple of other station issues. We have talked before about falling objects at the, you know, the one at the Harvard station, ceiling panel, then weeks later, utility box. When Eng was on WCVB over the weekend, he talked about being concerned about those incidents.
One of the things I decided that we needed was a head of stations. And the reason for that in the past agencies, I saw where a head of stations is a single point of accountability, right? Somebody who is managing a team. Obviously, we have many stations across the system, but that team will be there to support this person in terms of the environment of our stations, the safety of our stations, and to bring together all the different functional groups that support addressing those in a more timely manner.
And here's the goal. Here's the vision for that person.
I look at stations, and I've said this in my past roles, it's almost like my living room, right? If I'm inviting someone into my living room, I want them to feel comfortable. I want them to feel safe. And it has to be a welcoming environment.
It was a moment for me, Brian Kane, to think of walking into an MBTA station and feeling like being welcomed into somebody's living room.
Boylston Station, thank you, is my station. So you can imagine how I feel. And I think we've all had that experience as native Bostonians or folks from the region. When you see tourists from other countries navigating the T and they sort of look around, and I think cringe might be the right word to use, although my kids would kill me for using it. It is a little bit embarrassing. So I think heads of stations is a great idea. I think there's a lot that can be done really quickly to brighten them up and make them a little better. But at the end of the day, it does come down to operating the system better. And I think we will get there.
And is there some low-hanging fruit, Chris Dempsey, that a head of station could do that really would? And what's on my mind, we said this way at the beginning of the show, this caution voice that we've heard from some members of the administration saying it could take a year before riders really feel the differences. Is there low-hanging fruit here?
Oh, there's lots we can do. Whether it's a fresh coat of paint, whether it's updated signage, there's lots of discussion on social media these days about how many maps throughout the MBTA system don't show the new Green Line extension to Medford and Tufts and Union Station. Union Station has been running for over a year now. Medford has been going for months. Those maps should be updated. If you are that tourist, you want to head to Somerville, you're looking at a map that says that,
that
there's a train that's there that doesn't exist.
Oh my God, I never thought of it that way
before. So some of those basics are really important. The MBTA works with a private company. I call them the red shirts, the folks that you might see in the stations who are contracted to be there to help. I think we need to better manage that workforce to make sure that they are there welcoming people to stations, providing directions, helping people with the fare system, which is only getting older and which needs constant updates and help. So there's lots that we can do to welcome people back to the T, whether they're returning from pre-COVID or whether they're there for the first time. Let's give them that good experience so they become regular riders.
So for the two of you, it sounds to me like you're both saying unequivocally a pretty good idea to do this head of station hire.
Absolutely.
The more attention on small issues like that, the better.
Okay, so now I'm going to be crabby for just a minute, right? I'm going to be just a little bit crabby because one of the things that struck us at when we were pulling sound from Eng's appearance on the record on WCVB over the weekend is how hard it is to pull sound from Philip Eng having spoken in the media. And we talked last week about the fact that we've invited him a number of times to come to WBUR, to come to Radio Boston and appear here on the show. We have not had an acceptance of that invitation yet. And a few weeks ago, we actually had Boston Globe columnist Joan Vinaki on challenging the Healey administration to be more communicative about the T in lots of different ways.
It reflects, I think, how an administration, you know, how a governor thinks about information and about transparency. And for all of, you know, the polls showing how popular Charlie Baker was, I mean, that just wasn't a priority of his or his administration.
It was so helpful to hear those firsthand answers, to hear the mindset of this new general manager. Should Philip Eng be doing more speaking directly to the public, Brian Kane?
Well, I think he actually has been. So with respect, my organization hosted a forum last week where he spent an hour with regional representatives from cities and towns across the service district talking just about these subjects. And it was a really great opportunity to hear from him and the board chair for the first time sort of together in a public forum like that. He's only been here 6 to 8 weeks. He admits he hasn't even been around the entire system yet. There's lots of commuter rail stations he wants to get to. So I do think he will be more communicative. I think he has been sufficiently communicative, but it will just take a little bit more time. I think he's still got to get his proverbial feet wet.
So maybe I'm just being crabby.
Oh, I would never say that.
And Chris, any additional thoughts from you on that?
So speaking to the media is absolutely a requirement of the job. You need to have that skill set. I think General Manager Eng brings a lot more to the table. He was not hired just because he can speak to the media, but he's managed large systems before, and that was the number one criteria that the Healey administration used. I agree with Brian that he's had opportunities, some he's taken, some he hasn't. I think he will be out there even more as time goes on, but I also want him walking through the system, engaging with riders, engaging with staff, at 10 Park Plaza, which is the state transportation building where the T is headquarters, working to install these reforms and change that culture. He's got a lot on his plate, and I know communication with the public is part of it, but it's not the only thing.
So two other things that I want to pick up from, and one of them I was going to do later, but I'll do it now. You said engaging with staff, and Brian Kane is as somebody who worked for the MBTA. One of the other things he talked about over the weekend, and he has sounded this note before, is that really strong desire to bring forward the pride that MBTA workers have had in their work and has been, you know, again, my words, not his, but smothered by the crisis and the tragedies, and really wanting to give them a way to voice that pride, feel that pride, and show that pride again. That does seem important.
It's essential to not only, so they have a recruitment issue, they also have a massive retainment issue of staff right now. And there is a lot of brain power that has been walking out the door in the last year as things have really sort of deteriorated to the point where we don't even know how bad it can get. But retaining that talent is critical. And to your point, Tiziana, I like to point out that the T is the system, once upon a time, where all or most of the nation's best transit managers got their starts. It was the system that put the Orange Line underground while expanding the Red Line on either side and massively expanding commuter rail, all while providing high-quality service. We heard at this forum last week that I hosted that at one point in the late 80s, they had something like 80% approval rating from their customers, customer service approval. My goodness, can you imagine even getting 8% today, let alone 80%? But yeah, the T can get there. The workforce works incredibly hard. I know a lot of those folks. They're out there toiling. I used to do snow and ice, for instance, after 2015. I was out there at 4 o'clock in the morning with people, making sure that the trains are going to operate. Those folks take it very seriously. For them, it is not just a job. It is a vocation. And they deserve the respect of folks that try to make this behemoth work every day with cars and equipment. In some cases, that is, you know, predates when people first walked on the moon.
So, again, and I said earlier, who knows what they're going to say after the break that's going to surprise me when you put it that way, right? Sometimes it's just when you put it that way. And that's really where I'm turning back to you, Chris Dempsey. So political Massachusetts playbook writer Lisa Kaczynski noted that overall the number of slow zones on the subway lines is down since Eng took over. The T also made changes to the bus driver's contract to get them to be able to start working full time for the first day on the job. There are some wins, right? And I recognize I wrote part of the lead for today. I know what we're emphasizing. What are other ways? Especially, I'm concerned about this. It's going to take a year for people to really feel it, right? What are other ways for us collectively, as a greater Boston community, as a Massachusetts community, as a regional community, to feel the winds as they come forward? Because this is about quality of living experience for all of us. It's for everyone.
Yeah. The MBTA is so wrapped up in the economy of Massachusetts, into the identity of Massachusetts. I was thinking about Brian talking about the pride of staff. You know, there are staff at the MBTA that have tattoos of the MBTA logo because they have that pride of being part of the system. But for the last 2, 4, 6, 8, 12 years, you know, you pick a number, the vector of the MBTA has been pointed downward. It's been getting worse over time. And I think we're starting to now see it's at least flat and maybe even starting to point up in the right direction. So bravo to the administration for turning that corner, and let's push to keep it going.
All right, Chris Dempsey, I do this every time at the end of the show, former Assistant Secretary of Transportation, Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board. Will you both come back and do it again?
We'd love to.
Absolutely.